Welcome to the Cycle Systems Academy podcast. It's been a while since I've done this intro, but I'm here because essentially this is a personal favour for me, this show. I've been thinking about buying the new rival ETAP access group set, and I thought, who will ask? And Sean, of course, is an expert on all things SRAM, so he was the man, and we decided to make it into a show, and we might dig a wee bit deeper. But meanwhile, how are things in Switzerland, Sean?
They're very pleasant. The sun is shining at the moment. We are heading down to Thun after we do this chat. We're going to go swimming in the Thun Sea and maybe drink some beer on the lakeside. Do you know Thun at all, John?
I do not know.
It's just down the road from Interlaken. So you're on the end of that big lake, which Interlaken sits in between. And you can see the Eiger and the Jungfrau and all the such from there. And it's 20 minutes on the train from Bern.
You know, it's funny, the only places I've been in Switzerland, I missed out everything else to get straight to the foot of the mountains back in the day. But it sounds like a really interesting place. I've been enjoying following your, particularly your Instagram, where essentially you just wander around forests setting fire to them with a dog.
There is that, yeah. And of course, you're allowed campfires here because it's Bern. It's great being in Bern because we're on the edge of the French-speaking part of Switzerland. So we're on the edge of Romandy. You know, you throw a stone and you hit someone who says bonjour. But we're learning German first because we're in the German-speaking. And it feels like a nice statement to be learning foreign languages at the moment. You know, so I'm slowly working through my Babbel app, learning Hochdeutsch. And then, of course, I've got to be interspersing it with the Schweizerdeutsch. And then after that comes French. So it's certainly no shortage of things to keep me occupied. And it's just funny, you know, because you don't ride on UK roads anymore.
No.
And it's been so widely publicised, the amount of aggression and difficulties people are having on the roads in the UK. And to be honest, down in Devon, I found it largely absent. Like when I lived in London, we do club runs up through Essex and Hertfordshire and stuff, and it was just full of arseholes, you know, to be perfectly honest. But riding in Devon, the kind of road rage incidents are exceptionally low, and people are very considerate. But certainly here in Switzerland, I'm on the edge of the capital city, and 5 minutes riding, I'm in the deep countryside on these little lanes that, you know, you hardly see a car. So the riding is quite something. And of course, I can go down the valley for a flat ride, or I can head up to the mountains and do some pretty serious climbing.
God, it's a hard life, isn't it? I tell you, I've been thinking about, the reason I've started thinking about the Rival ETAP is I've found a brace that supports my elbow. So I've been getting longer and longer rides in the gravel around Glentress. So my history with gearing goes back a very long way. You know, I'm 60 next year, so I was riding back when, you know, men were men and sheep were nervous. And I remember spending a ridiculous amount of money on a Huey Duopar derailleur from a touring bike. And its big claim to fame was, you know, wait for it, you won't believe this, you could sometimes change while you were still pedalling. Which is, you know, it's hard to believe that in, what, 40 years, we've gone to a situation where, you know, there's no cables. And famously, in an early Velocast, I said that DI2 would never catch on because it was just a gimmick. Mm-hmm. And I've been wrong about many things, but I think that might be the wrongest thing I've ever said on the Velocast.
Well, to be fair, you know, the only electronic group sat before that was the Mavic Mechtronic, and, you know, also called the Mavic Zap.
Yeah.
And that was famously poor, and people like Chris Boardman losing races because he couldn't shift from the 12 to the 11 sprocket. And I think that happened to a few road riders as well, didn't it? So
yeah.
Things don't work until they do, and then they work exceptionally well. So I was really keen to look at the SRAM Access a little bit after the launch, as it were, because it's easy to rehash press releases. And, you know, we do attend webinars from SRAM as well. In fact, anyone that's listened to the Bike Shop show recently, which has relaunched, hooray, will know.
Yeah, thank God
that,
for that. It took long enough.
Yeah, so we found out, first of all, that the lady we see David Palan riding with all the time isn't, in fact, his wife. So that was the first interesting one. Just a friend, David. And secondly, we all attended this SRAM launch for the mountain bike group sets, GX group sets, and they're nice launches, but it is more of a PR than a mechanics insight. So I wanted to get the real mechanics insight into this, you know, very affordable electronic group set, but I wanted to do it within the framework of gear systems and how they work.
Yeah.
So we can really start to look at some of the details of what is and isn't included.
Yeah, there's a big difference between what product knowledge you need to sell a product. You know, if I was selling something in the, you know, in the shop as a retail employee at the bike co-op where we, you know, we used to swap roles from time to time, then it would be very different from talking to Andrew, our workshop manager. You know, he'd have a completely different perspective on it. And for you and I think the mechanics perspective is probably more interesting than, you know, the man who's actually on the shop floor.
And also, it's about what you're going to prioritize. So I think the thing that really shifts for people, no pun intended, when they do our training courses and then start getting experience in the workshop, is they start realizing that a bike that you'd buy off the shop floor, which it'd be difficult to buy a bad bike these days, to be fair, but they'll often realize it's not quite right for them. Because of course it wasn't built for them. It was built for the hundreds of thousands of people. And that's what was nice with speaking to North Road Cycles last week, because they said, well, we can do you the bigger set, or we can do you the narrower bars, or whatever it is that you want, the color that you like. And if we're looking at the Rival Access group set, with it being the entry level group set currently for electronic stuff, you might want to look at, shall I change out a few bits? And once you have informed awareness of the systems and how they work, you can start really picking and choosing, because there's a reason you're not buying the red group set, and it's normally cost, isn't it? So What was interesting is North Road, they said, well, let's swap out the chain set because that's the bulkiest element. So with this SRAM Rival Access group set, you've got an aluminium crank-armed chain set, which has got completely solid arms. So it's not got the hollow chain sets, which makes quite a big difference in terms of weight.
Yeah.
So, of course, they're thinking of the spec sheet. You know, they're thinking of the spec sheet, because what do most people do when they look at a spec sheet? They look at the frame, they look at the price, they look at the group set, and they look at the weight. But personally, I think there'd be other elements to look at within the system.
This is interesting because, I mean, what I've found recently whenever I've been working with any of the manufacturers' group sets is that usually you or I would advocate just sticking to stock. You know, because it's all designed to work together, and you'll get the best performance by sticking to what the original designers wanted to achieve when they were designing the group set. Do you think maybe we're returning to, you know, the 80s or the 90s where you would mix and match and still get a bike that works really well?
I definitely wouldn't do that. Essentially, the great thing about the Access family, if you want to call it that, is everything is intercompatible. So we can look at that, especially for your gravel riding later. Yeah. But say
that's,
for
that's
example...
That's exactly the point I wanted to make, is we're talking about fine-tuning within a family. We're not talking about introducing, you know, an old TA chain set and it'll still work with a front derailleur.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, sort of going on the SRAM TechU this morning, I was learning, you know, things on there that I'd never come across, even on some of the more so-called basic lessons. And just wanted to share some of this, because if it's new to me, it might be new to some of the listeners. Mm. And one of them was the chain set power peanut. Have you come across the power peanut, John?
It sounds like something you'd order in a plain wrapper and get delivered by the postman, and it would need AA batteries or something.
Yeah, I might have to Google that after we record just to see if that's the case. It sounds quite entertaining. I might get a couple for the summer holidays, you know. So the power peanut, it starts to make sense when you think about the Opel chainring system. All it is a diagram of the forces that are applied by most riders to the chain set and the chain rings. So, you know, your chain set, imagine your chain ring is round. And when you pedal, there are certain areas where you can and typically do put more power into the chain set. And in fact, even though we've had toe clips and cleats and now clipless pedals for years, it's been widely proven that if you try and deliver 360 degrees of power it's actually less efficient than just really giving it the power in the places that's comfortable. So the power peanut is a shape, like a peanut, funnily enough, around your crank arm, which shows very clearly the places of most and least force. Now, just briefly on the oval rings, so kind of brackets around this, is I remember one of the first shows we did with Team Sky when I went out to Mallorca with Team Sky. And I was chatting with Tim Kerrison about the oval rings, because, of course, Wiggins and Froome were on oval rings at the time. And Tim Kerrison, head coach at Team Sky, he said, well, I've done a tremendous amount of research into the oval rings. And first of all, the riders have to adapt to riding them. So if you just jump on oval rings straight away, you're going to have less power. But he said, once they've adapted, there's absolutely zero benefit or net loss. So he said, while we encourage our riders to use round chain rings because it makes the front mech setup easier, because there's a consistent, you know,
distance between the chain ring and the front mech.
Yeah, he says if they really want it, because it gives them a psychological boost, then we won't stop them. So it's a bit like the ceramic bearings. You know, Sky stroke Ineos believe that ceramic bearings make no difference under load, but they're happy for the riders to get the psychological benefit that it brings. So brackets on the outside of that. Coming back to the power peanut then, when we look at, you know, John's bike circa 1975 and pretty much anyone's bike now, even a completely entry-level bike, will be that the actual chain rings have been fantastically designed with all sorts of ramps and chamfers, which are completely aligned with chamfers and shaping in the chain to allow the chain to shift from small ring to big ring. And we'll come on to triples shortly and why they're not so popular now, to allow it to shift at a point of least force on the chain from pedaling. So obviously when you're pedaling, you're putting a load on the chain. So if you use your power peanut to analyze the place of least force on the chain from pedaling, then the mech requires less force to shift the chain from chain ring to chain ring.
It's mind-boggling for anybody who rode bikes before all of this technology was available.
Exactly, because you just couldn't shift on a hill, could you? Or under a sprint or something. Whereas now, even the entry-level group sets, this Rival Access included, you can shift at any time without overloading the system so much that it can break the chain or overly wear the chain. And what I thought was really fascinating, and it's obvious when you look at a SRAM chain set, is while on the outer part of the chain rings, there's just a set amount of chamfers to shift the chain up to the big ring. On a SRAM chain set, every single tooth on the big ring, the inner side of the tooth, has got a chamfer to allow the chain to drop easily to the small ring. And they're precisely angled chamfers to drop the compatible chain onto the inner ring. So that's why if you buy a KMC chain or some sort of other very good chain that's supposedly compatible with the SRAM rings, it probably isn't engineered as precisely as the SRAM one, especially with the Access flat top system. So with the outer chain rings, then there are certain teeth which have got deeper chamfers and they're aligned with big channels. So it's a low friction as possible to allow it just to drop in.
Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely astonishing. I mean, you can shift essentially under a full sprint either way and it'll just change. And although rear shifts are, you know, breathtakingly good these days, it's the front shift in these group sets that really blows my mind. Yeah. And the one thing about SRAM, long-term listeners will remember, I've been really derogatory about SRAM in the past. And what the Access system seems to address is all of the bits of SRAM I didn't like. You know, I didn't like anything which involved a cable and friction, because they seem to make springs or plastic bits that broke. And I didn't like double tap. I just couldn't get round double tap because my hands were so used to the Shimano system of shifting. But Rival, by taking away the cables, takes away most of the points of failure that used to frustrate you and I about SRAM so often.
Yes, because certainly, you know, this group set, we'll get into pricing and weight and such later, but it isn't the cheapest group set and it isn't the lightest group set. And when it came out, you know, quite a lot of roadies are saying, well, why would I buy this when I can get the SRAM Red Mechanical for cheaper and it's much, much lighter? And SRAM Red Mechanical was famously the lightest of the mechanical group sets. And you know, the obvious answer is that it doesn't wear out all the time. You know,
I was just going to say, your front handlebar shifter won't break with monotonous regularity.
Basically, that's a very good way to put it. SRAM were quite funny on social media because someone said, or many people said this to them on social media, and they said, well, this one goes whir buzz, which is kind of cool. So, yeah, they have definitely removed a lot of it. And like we've said before, never be an early adopter. The early versions of this group set that were given to professional riders and sold to the public didn't work very well in the rain.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to get a new battery with you know, better sealing in. One of the bits of feedback you get from regular riders is if you're not careful, and this is the caveat, this is, you know, high-tech kit here, if you're not careful, you can break the tabs on the batteries because you need to remove them to charge them. If those battery tabs break, you get water ingress very quickly. So if you do break the battery tabs, guys, you've got to replace the component. Don't just keep riding it because you will just get a catastrophic failure.
But, I mean, I'm at a situation now where I'm looking at buying SRAM. So do you want to run quickly through the group set?
Before I do, I'd just like to finish up something that I've just learned about triple chain sets and why they're not so popular now. And again, it's one of those things that when you learn it, it sounds obvious straight away. It's a bit like my learning German. A lot of it seems obvious now. Whereas, of course, if you'd asked me 6 months ago to say the neighbours are nice, I couldn't have said it, right? So essentially, it's funny, isn't it? You're learning all this stuff. But essentially, with the triple chain sets, one of the things that, you know, again, SRAM led this. We went to 2x on the mountain bike and then 1x that's coming across other areas in cycling. And one of the big things with front mechs is they're a pain to set up. So a lot of riders can't set them up. There's extra weight. There's extra complexity. And also for mountain bikes, the front mech and all of the chain rings were getting in the way of the suspension systems and the wider and wider tires. But what I didn't appreciate until SRAM Tech U pointed it out is because we've talked about these ramps and chamfers needed for an upshift and a downshift. If you imagine on a double chain set, your inner ring has one set of these chamfers and the big ring has another set. Whereas on a triple chain set, the middle chain ring has both sets of these ramps and chamfers.
You'd have so many chamfers, you'd have no chain ring left.
Well, that's the thing, is there's a huge amount of material removed to make it work efficiently. And of course, if you're on a triple chain set, which ring are you in most? At the front, the middle. Yeah. So it was, you know, they wear out a lot more quickly. And of course, when people were on, you know, the top of the range super light stuff, it would wear out more quickly again. So I just wanted to drop that in there. So if we look at the group set, I think, Robin, just look at each piece individually, which I think is a bit hackneyed, and you can do that on any manner of review sites online.
Yeah, it's been all over the web since it's released.
It has. What I wanted to look at, because not all the information's in one place, as far as I'm aware, is I wanted to look at what's the same and what's different to the Force and the Red group sets higher up the range and the price point, obviously. And then to look at those technologies in a bit more detail to what it means. Because it's very easy to hear about an orbit damped rear mech and not know what it is and what's the difference, for example. So
that's it. I'm going back to my Huey Geopar again. There's a theme here. I remember it was a beautiful thing of titanium and springs and stuff. There's fluid dampers and all sorts in rear mechs now.
It is quite staggering, isn't it? And of course, this tech does trickle down.
God, I sound like someone's granddad.
Well, it keeps us all in a job, doesn't it? You know, basically all this new stuff. So essentially, what's the same? Like a lot of SRAM group sets, there's more similarities than there are differences, actually. So what's the same here is exactly the same motors. You've got exactly the same electronic brain. shift logic, so software, firmware, etc., exactly the same antenna. Mm-hmm. What's fascinating is both James Wang from Rode CC and Matt Phillips from Bicycling Magazine have both said in their subjective perception the rival access is shifting more quickly than both the Red and the rival.
Which is fascinating.
Isn't it? And they you know, Matt contacted SRAM to say, what's different? And they said, no, they said the ramping's not the same on the cassettes. The ramping's the same on the chains, the chain sets. The firmware's the same. So on paper, there should be no difference. And for those of you that care about these things, the Shimano electronic shifting up to now has always been faster. And that's mostly because it's wired.
Yeah.
And the same with the Campagnolo EPS. An electronic signal goes more quickly through a wire than it does wireless.
It's the reason I record on Ethernet rather than Wi-Fi.
Yeah, it completely makes sense, doesn't it? And the only research I've seen done, independent research I've seen done, was on the older ETAP, the 11-speed ETAP system. And on that ETAP system, the front mech was 14% slower on the SRAM system and up to 40% slower on the rear. Mm-hmm. But I am aware that access system has sped SRAM up, but I've not yet seen any independent research into the speed. What I'm aiming for with cycle systems is to be able to get to the point where I can buy and research this stuff. You know, that's what I'd like to be doing, is doing this research, you know, a bit like Xavier Disley does with...
Yeah, we talked about that in the early days of the Velocast, didn't we?
Yeah, exactly. That would be my dream role. But at the moment, you know, it's not to be. So for some reason, some people, and I can't verify it, but some people are saying that it feels faster.
Do you think maybe it's the slightly heavier materials are adding a wee bit of stiffness that's making it crisper?
That's what I was going to come on to, because it seems to be the only possible thing. However, there are things which would contradict that. So say, for example, with rear cassettes. So again, if we take the deep dive into this, rear cassettes can either be individual sprockets, which people used to love in the days of, you know, 7-speed, 11-21 cassettes and such, because you could choose your gear ratios.
Happy days.
But when you've got individual sprockets that you slide onto a free hub body, what you've got is each individual sprocket can flex somewhat compared to a one-piece cassette. And each of the individual sprockets will have a slightly different pickup as well. So there's lots of little inefficiencies built in there. And especially as the cassettes are getting larger and larger, especially with the one-by systems, but SRAM's, you know, so X-range system as well has much bigger sprockets at the back than previously. So these issues are accentuated. So SRAM were the first people to do the one-piece cassettes out of a single, you know,
Trade show you went to for years was starting with a billet of aluminium and then finishing up with a cassette.
And you know, they're works of beauty, these SRAM one-piece cassettes, but they were incredibly noisy. They transfer the noise incredibly efficiently. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people on Red Group sets used to ride Dura-Race cassettes because they were just too noisy, no matter how damn efficient they were. And what SRAM did, correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, first of all, with the Eagle 12-speed cassettes, was to make a one-piece cassette, but out of individual cogs or sprockets with a huge amount of material removed, which are pinned, but they're pinned on the outer edges of the sprockets, not mm-hmm. pinned through the middle, which is, you know, like 105 cassettes pinned through the middle, and it means that the sprockets flex at the end. So this type of pinned cassette is very efficient, but it's a lot cheaper to make than the one piece. So on the rival, you've got a pinned cassette rather than the one piece of the Red, and you would expect the one piece to be stiffer.
Yeah. I mean, it's very interesting. There must be a reason, because particularly, you know, James and Matt are not stupid, you know, and they've got a lot of experience reviewing products. So I'm inclined to believe them. You know, their perception is probably very, very good.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I've noticed actually, which not specifically about this, but just as a kind of, I don't know if you've noticed this, Sean, with some of the ultralight free hub bodies that you have now, I've even seen individual cogs creep forward if they're the cog that's used the most, which again is going to affect all of these ramps and chamfers and stuff in the rear cassette.
I've seen that on relatively new bikes.
Yeah.
I remember we had a student who went and bought himself a gravel bike down in Plymouth while he was on the course, did one ride on it, and came back and he said, Sean, the gears aren't working. And he'd gone through his basic level 2 gear setup and he couldn't quite get it. And I had a look and I could see the issue was one sprocket, and we took the cassette off and, yeah, hey presto, the HG free hub body had deformed in one ride. He was a big lad, and that's it.
Yep.
So one of the slight disappointments of the new Shimano 12 speed, which is going to be out any day, or the embargo is lifted any day, is I'm told reliably it's going to use the same 11 speed HG free hub body rather than the micro spline. And the micro spline is fantastic for having more resistance to that. Yeah. So we're back onto the SRAM, the XD and XDR, you know, free hub bodies do seem very resistant to that because we've just got this one piece cassette, however it's made.
One thing that really intrigues me is clutches in rear mechs, because this is something it's come to the fore after I stopped working in the industry. You know, so this is a technology that is basically entirely new to me. It makes a lot of sense and I understand it. That's one of the places where they've made some economic cuts as well. I mean, they've gone for a sprung clutch instead of the fluid one, haven't they?
Yeah, so the Force and the Rival have got this orbit damper, which is literally, you know, silicon fluid damper built into the rear mech, and this has got a spring, you know, a clutch spring. Mm-hmm. So essentially, they're both going to work well. You know, they're both going to stop the chain jumping off. They're really going to help you if you go for the one by option, and we'll talk about that shortly. But one of the things that people have measured with clutched rear mechs is friction. And does it add friction for pedaling? Does it add friction for shifting? And in fact, interestingly, SRAMs, even mechanical clutches, come out at very, very low or sometimes no extra pedaling friction. You know, whereas Shimano's clutches did add quite a lot of extra pedaling friction, relatively speaking. So if you're looking at pure performance, you know, racing type performance, then the orbit damper is, you know, going to have more efficiency there. But it's better to have some clutch than none, especially if you're looking at gravel riding or just riding on even Devon roads, etc.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that you can really notice rear mechs slapping around when they don't have it. Mm. And gravel has made that very, very different. One other thing where I really sat and thought for a long while about whether this would be right for me is you've also lost the ability to add satellite shifters. And I really like the idea of having, you know, satellite shifters on the tops, for example, so that if you're on a bumpy bit of gravel, you don't have to move your hands to shift gear. But I think that's a perfectly acceptable compromise, because I've ridden mechanical group sets without satellite shifters for all of my life.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's got to be a reason to buy the more expensive stuff, hasn't there? So the blip shifters, they are fantastic, you know, so plugging in the extra shifters. And I think it's just literally to give you a reason to go for the more expensive stuff. And definitely, if I was riding gravel, you know, I'd love to have the blips. Obviously, if you're looking at a time trial setup, this is definitely not the thing. But since when has there been a cheap time trial bike?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, looking at the gearing options, it's not something you'd put in a testing bike anyway.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
If you want to break into the bike trade, train your staff, or even learn some new skills just for fun, Cycle Systems Academy has a course for you. Our graduates come to us from all over the globe and train with us to gain the highest recognized cycle mechanic qualifications available. The bike industry supports and believes in Cycle Systems Academy, which means they'll believe in you too.
So essentially, in terms of the differences, then, apart from the blips, there's a massive difference between finish and materials. The brake levers are plastic. Now, they've given it a fancy name, but they're plastic brake levers rather than the carbon fiber of the higher end. So we'll see how they are in terms of strength and such. They still look pretty cool,
yeah,
to be fair. There isn't a rim brake option, as there is with Force and Red. And in fact, the Red rim brake access has been on special offer recently, so you've probably seen it at reasonably good prices. But the reason is, no fucker wants it.
Yeah. Well, other than old farts like me.
Yeah, very few. It's a lot heavier than the Red. So it, in terms of weighing these groups, it depends on the myriad of options. But you're looking at approximately 650 grams more than the Red group set, and around 250, 300 grams more than the Force.
Yeah.
Now, these sound quite negligible, but in terms of percentages, when you look in group sets that are around 2 kilos, it's really quite a percentage of the overall weight. And you know that it's so easy to say, well, 200 grams doesn't matter here, doesn't matter there, doesn't matter there.
Marginal gains, mate.
You've got a bike that's several kilos heavier, and it really does make the difference.
No, it does. I've got to say, for the proposed use that this group set will mostly go to, I don't think it's that big a difference. If I was building up a light or even, you know, UCI legal road bike, you know, purely for the road, then I wouldn't even look at this. Even a porky podcaster like me doesn't want an extra pound and a half on their bike. But for a gravel bike where you're going to be carrying 2 pounds of mud if you live in Scotland anyway the first time you go out, I suspect it's not going to make that much of a difference.
I think so. And the thing is, this is and will be put on lots of mid-end road bikes. So, you know, it's not a cheap group set. So you're still looking around £3,000 road bikes.
Yeah.
And that used to be your Jura Ace, you know, 6.5 kilo bike. Whereas now, you know, you're going to be looking at quite a porky machine, which no matter what Mike's dad says, it really, really does make a difference, especially when you're going uphill at, I think it's over 7% gradients.
Well, I mean, I'm a number of stone heavier than my racing weight, and I can still notice 2 pounds difference in a bike.
Yeah, definitely, especially when you're out the saddle and smashing it up. Some of the benefits in material changes are the fixings. So the SRAM Red hydraulic brake calipers come with titanium fixings, which are made out of SRAM's own special cheese. And like we talked about with Dave Rome, you really, really do need the most fantastic PB Swiss or Pedros Pro Torx drivers in order to remove these things. Otherwise, at the correct torque, no matter how much copper slip or correct tie grease you've got on there, you're just going to round them off.
Yeah, so there will be a drill involved at some point.
Exactly, which is really kind of scary on the frames that the Red's going to be put on. So to have fixings that are a few grams heavier, personally, even if I was fitting the Red, I would be tempted to use those.
Yeah.
We've got a lot less range of cassettes. So the Red obviously is more at racers. So we've got the 1026, 1028, 1033. For the Rival, we've got 1030. And we've got 1036. And what's interesting here is they sound quite dramatic, especially the 1036. But what SRAM do is they're always looking at percentages of difference between gears. And of course, the bigger the sprocket or the chainring, but if we look at the sprockets at the rear, the bigger the sprocket, the more the difference for the same percentage.
Yeah.
So this was an example on the SRAM Tech Queue from this morning. I've just got to find it. Sorry, I'm at the wrong bit of my notes here. So if you have an 18-tooth sprocket, the 16% change there, up or down, is 3 teeth. Whereas once you get up to that 32-tooth sprocket, the exact same 16% change, so it will feel the same when you shift, is 6 teeth.
Yeah.
So people sometimes look at these cassettes and go, whoa, it's got a granny gear. Do you remember those Shimano Mega Range 7-speed cassettes? It looks like one of those. But because of the size and the proportions, you have actually got
consistent percentage shifts through the range.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's all about percentages. You know, you can look at gear inches and you can, you know, look at cassette sprocket count. But the percentages is what matters in your overall ratio and the differences. Whereas gear inches and gear centimetres, or gear millimetres if you want to go there, is useful to compare and contrast the very highest and lowest gears on different setups.
I tell you what, though, I mean, this is me going to sound like a granddad again. When you look at that rotating around that 10 sprocket, those links look tortured.
Yes, and in fact, it's something that we discussed with SRAM. And one of the things that was really fascinating there was that the chain design, because obviously SRAM know about chain efficiency, and they were looking at the chain design for the flat top access chain, and they've tried as much as possible to take this into account. In terms of upgrades, again, let's look at a bit at chain construction, and then let's look at the different chains that are out there. So a chain is often your best upgrade within a system. Mm-hmm. So say, for example, the SRAM Eagle, which, you know, lots and lots of bikes come with a GX option, for example. Lots of people are riding that. But if you get the top-end EXO chain on there, it's going to make a massive performance difference and, in fact, last much, much longer.
Yep.
So with chains, what you've got is, first of all, the different ways of pinning them together, which can affect performance. You've also got different materials and different finishes as well. And then the overall design will really affect the strength. So essentially, when chains are built at the factory, when the pins are pushed in by a machine, the very cheapest chains, what they have is just called a single pass rivet. And if you look at a cheaper chain, what you'll see is the rivets on each pin have just got two flat lines at the ends, because a machine has just pressed that pin in and riveted it in one direction only. So it works, but of course it's not as strong. It's not got as much push-through strength as some of the other designs. So another design you'll see a few sort of versions up on the range is called a double pass pin. And what that means is that you look at the chain pin and it's squared off because the machine has pressed the pin in, gone back, rotated 90 degrees and pressed again.
Yep.
So now the entire circumference of the chain pin has been riveted in a square manner. And what's interesting is the very best pins use something called circumferential riveting. I hope I've said that correctly. And even this rival chain uses circumferential riveting, and it's also a type of flush riveting, which means that the outer part of the rivet is flush with the outside of the chain rather than bulging outside. So what it means is you can have a narrower profile chain without all sorts of bulgy parts on. So you've got very, very high tech chain technology in the rival chain. The actual coating is you know, not the same as the red.
Yep.
Exactly. And personally, I'd always go for the red chain, because essentially you've got the nitride coating on there. It has less friction, both for pedaling and shifting, and it also just lasts a lot longer. So it's quite a small difference in expense, but it's a really considerable benefit.
Yeah. We should say as well that, I mean, one of the reasons I was talking about you wouldn't put this group set on a testing bike is this won't handle rear sprockets smaller than 26 or 28 rather. It's not spec'd for them. You have to go up the range to rival and red for that. Not rival, force.
That's your lowest gear. Your lowest gear can't be smaller than that, yeah.
I mean, it's all interesting stuff. The other thing that for me, you know, coming back to a bit of training last year and training for the first time with power.
Sorry, John, just one last thing on the chains. The red chain has got hollow pins to save weight, whereas the Force and the Rival doesn't.
Oh, which, you know, you're not going to worry about that much with this group set. You know, I've got to say, I was just going to add in that there's a very affordable power meter option with this as well. It's a single-sided one, which has limitations. You know, my legs are very unbalanced after my hip replacement, so I went for a dual-sided power meter. But, you know, this is a good option if you're wanting to train with power and you don't want to spend a stupid amount of money on some of the more expensive systems.
Yeah, definitely a benefit for your weekend warriors out there to measure their power. Well, essentially, I think we've covered most of the differences between this group set and the rival and the red. We've looked at all of the things that are the same. So what I wanted to look at is in which option. So we've got the 2-by option. We've got the 1-by option. And then, of course, we've got the 1980s footballer mullet option as well. So what were your thinking on them?
There's some interest. I mean, it blows my mind seeing 4330 as a chainsaw option.
Yep.
My brain can't cope with it. You've also got options in terms of width. They've got a wider one that you can use if you want to run, is it up to 45 mil tyres at the back?
That's right.
You know, there's all sorts of options. You've got 4 or 5 crank length options.
Yeah.
You've got 4330, 4835, 4633 in double. You've got 38, 40, 42, 44, and 46 in single. It's time to visit Sheldon Brown and get your gearing calculation out. This is where we are going back to me with my Huey Duopar and my spreadsheets.
Exactly. I mean, we still teach gear inches at the academy because it's so useful to look at, well, what's my very lowest gear? What's my very highest gear? You know, what's the overall range difference? I mean, for example, if you've got a 1036 cassette and a 4330 chainring, that is a 516 percentage range of difference, which is a staggering range. And depending on the tyres... depending on the tyres that you're running that affect the gear inches, it's roughly 116 high gear, which is, you know, probably equal to or higher than any gear Eddie Merckx ever rode, down to, get this, a 23-inch low gear.
Mental. You know, the thing that surprises me, and I've gone back to granddad mode, is all of this just works.
Yeah, it just works. And the thing is, you put this on your gravel bike or your all-road adventure bike with 30 mil wide tyres, you're going to love that 23-inch gear. And especially if you're bikepacking, you know, anyone that does lots of road riding, you think you know gears, but as soon as you throw a whole load of kit on your bike, especially with all the food and water that you're going to take camping, and you really go, oh, that's why they had triples on their bikes.
The wide range cassettes actually mean that for a lot of people, a single ring setup is going to be absolutely fine.
I'd say so, and it definitely really does remove, you know, a lot of the hassles out. But there are, and again, I made a few notes here from the SRAM TechU, because there's a few things, you know, I knew most of this, but there's one or two things that I thought was interesting about the single, you know, setup there. So essentially with your 1-by setup, the great thing is you've just got a lot less, you know, sort of hassle going on there. Also, the actual chain links themselves can be designed to be a lot more aligned with each individual tooth.
Yeah.
So if you imagine, if you've got a chain that needs to be able to shift between chain rings, and if you've got chain rings that need to be able to drop and catch a chain, there's going to be more movement and more play and more variation than a single ring with a nice squared off, narrow wide profile that perfectly fits the chain. But also the kind of ramping and shaping they can put onto the teeth. This is the thing I didn't know, that as well as using it to retain the chain without adding friction, can be used to shed mud. And again, doesn't it sound obvious?
No, it had never even occurred to me.
No, nor me. But if you're riding it off-road, not only are you not getting mud caught in the front mech or between the rings, but the actual chain ring itself has been engineered with the chain to shed mud as you're riding.
Like a tyre tread?
Basically, yeah.
To force mud out under the pressure of the chain and the power that you're putting through the chain set.
Correct, yeah. So even on these so-called entry-level group sets, there's a staggering amount of engineering and testing that's gone into it.
Do you know what, though? I mean, one thing about 1-by, and this is a completely trivial thing, did you see the bike that Joe Biden gave to Boris Johnson?
It's going to be hard to comment on that.
Yeah. I'm sure it rides beautifully. Your Belinky bikes are, they've got a good name. It's got good equipment, all that kind of thing. Aesthetically, it's a monstrosity, and the frame is one of the reasons. But can I just say, again, from my old man's perspective, I do not like bikes where the largest sprocket on the rear cassette is bigger than your chainring.
Well,
it's just, you know, wrong. It looks wrong.
As a mountain biker, that's just normal now. So I'm just not bothered, you know. And
it deeply offends me.
Yeah, I don't think it's the worst thing about that bike, but we better not go there.
So, am I going to buy this?
Well, when you can get it. I mean, we are told at the moment August at the earliest, and I'm sure we've missed the boat in terms of ordering it. You know, we got the order spreadsheet over from Rally UK when this came out. And I will say, even for this entry-level group set, the ordering spreadsheet is almost bewildering.
Yeah.
The amount of options there are amazing, which means for yourself as a rider, it's great. But it also means, of course, if you just buy a stock bike, you may not end up with exactly what you want. If you want to go for the mullet option, which is where you're going to be using the mountain bike rear mech, the Eagle rear mech with an Eagle cassette, the great thing is the GX Eagle is incredibly available. Mm-hmm. So that's there as well for options, either for your own build or for the bike shop to build it up. So if you do want to buy it, I would be getting your order in today, because a lot of bike shops have probably already taken orders, maybe even taken money off people. And once the first lot is sold out, which probably be very quick, we're just not sure in terms of replacement stock. Yeah. You didn't answer the question, though. Double one by our mullet.
Double.
Yep.
Double for me. For the reasons we discussed back when we did the show about, you know, my potential adventure touring bike. The jumps between the gears is absolutely perfect for me with a double. I can make it work very, very easily. I don't need the mullet. Although, you know, in Glen Tress, if you're using it as a gravel bike in Glen Tress, it would really open up what you could ride uphill. Rather than having to get off and walk on some of the steeper trails, so I could really see some use for it. And one by is going to be fine for most people. So there's actually a reason for all of those options. You know, there's a use case for every single one of those options.
Yep, definitely. And really, the only caveat, John, is that the Shimano embargo is just about to be lifted, so you don't necessarily want to be handing money over for something and then see the 105 Di2 come out and go, oh, I should have gone for that.
Well, you and I can do another show next week and we can make the decision for me.
That sounds good to me. Yeah, I'm not saying the Shimano one will be better necessarily, but I'm just saying that at the moment I'm at the position where I want to replace my main squeeze group sex, a bit like my mountain bike. My main squeeze road bike has now been given to my son. Yep. So I'm on a fairly stock bike with a 105. I'm 105 guy at the moment.
105 is fine.
It's not, it's shit.
I like 105.
It's shit. The road one with hydraulic brakes has got appalling shifting.
Oh, really? See, I've only ever ridden it with in-brakes.
Yeah, I mean, again, it had good and not so good versions. So the 5800 10 speed with the cables coming out the side of the shifters was great, although it was heavy. The 5900, the first generation 10 speed with gear cables under the bar tape, was terrible.
Oh, awful.
Just like all of those second generation 10 speed group sets were terrible. Yeah. You remember the Cervelo test team was still on the older system at the time.
I never understood why they went away from the exposed cable, because it was so obviously more efficient.
Well, it was just looks. Yeah. It was a bit like, you know, you sent me a funny quote from a mechanic I respect tremendously the other day. And every bit of it was correct, but I won't break that because that'll be out there for Velocast subscribers. But look, when we spoke to Keith Bontranger, he said, look, the bike industry is a fashion industry. And internal cables, it's the fashion.
And of course, with aero bikes now, it's actually a bit more of a necessity than it was when they changed back then. You know, what's the point of having the most aero frame in the world if you've got 10 grams of drag from cables hanging out there in the wind?
I think the key part of that, John, is what's the point of having the most aero frame in the world?
Yeah, absolutely. God, we're both turned into old men now, Sean. Where can people find you, other than stoking about the trails of Bern?
Yeah, in the woods in Bern, isn't it? we are at Cycle Systems ACK on Twitter, but we are now Cycle Systems Online on Facebook. Still Cycle Systems ACK on Instagram as well. So you can look for some real goodies coming really soon with Cycle Systems Online. That's what we've actually been doing in Bern. We're not just swimming in the tuna sea. We are working as well. So watch this space.
No, I think a lot of the technology has opened up possibilities that you and I were talking about 10 years ago that simply weren't possible in terms of online learning and that kind of thing. So I'm really excited to see what you're coming up with as well.
Yeah, definitely. And with travel hopefully opening up, I'll be visiting some friends in Germany relatively soon. Hoping to get to Eurobike if that does actually happen. Be visiting some new friends in Switzerland soon as well, such as guys at DT Swiss. So we'll have some great content for you.
Yeah, I wouldn't make Eurobike. Britain's going to be a plague island again very, very soon, I would think.
Well, on that jolly note... Farewell from the mountains.